Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 1st. The first order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Sundin moves approval of the minutes dated Tuesday, January 31st. Is there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Yeah, we're all done. Members, we have one bill on the agenda today. It is House File 315. The chair will move House File 315 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Anderson, do you have any amendments for your own bill?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Is that the A1 amendment?
It is.
So, members, I'll move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author would like. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, welcome to the Jobs Committee and your bill.
Thank you,
please,
Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
What my bill does is it provides a 25% tax credit to employees who work for an employer that does not currently provide paid leave benefits. It also provides for a 25% tax credit as an incentive to employers to provide that to their employees. And that's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Anderson, do you have any testifiers in your bill that you wish to bring forward at this time?
I do believe I have one testifier.
All right. Is that Mr. McElroy?
It is.
Are you Dan McElroy, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. The association's board took a position in support of tax credits to make it easier for employers to offer paid family leave. We have about 2,000 member locations in all 134 legislative districts around the state that range in size from very small family-owned restaurants to fairly good-sized businesses. I had a membership meeting this morning in Minneapolis with about 25 of our members, and in preparing for this hearing, asked them, what are the top two problems? What are the things that keep you up at night and that you worry about? And almost universally, they said the number one thing is attracting and keeping great employees, and the number two thing is coping with government mandates, in some cases new mandates. This bill helps us with the first without adding to the second, because it makes it more economically attractive to provide paid family leave, to do it in a way that works for individual businesses in terms of how a specific program may be designed, how long an employee may have had to work, or how many hours they work. Unlike some mandates where a singular solution has to try and fit a wide range of businesses, this approach provides maximum flexibility and financial incentives. And my members are pleased with the fact that it provides incentives both to employers of any size and to our employees so that it becomes a shared value that parenting and families are important and that we'd like our employees to stay with us for a very long time. So we're pleased to be supportive of this approach, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. And will you be around for questions later on?
Whatever's helpful to the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, do you have any other invited testifiers?
Not from my end.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we have a couple people who signed up in advance to testify. We'll start with Carrie Heiberg. And then on deck is Todd Mickelson. Todd, are you here? All right, so you're next up. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carrie Heiberg. I live in District 33B. I'm here today to urge the committee not to settle for a weak and limited legislation on family leave. My husband has a chronic illness. He is an accountant and a financial educator who struggles to balance career with health. Throughout his career working for small companies, he's had several instances of working to the point of exhaustion and hospitalization because we couldn't afford for him to lose wages or lose his job. At times when he's really sick, we have to piecemeal together caregivers from our network of friends and family because we can't afford for me to miss work. It would make a huge difference to our family if there were a common sense social insurance program that allowed us to care for his health and get back to work more well and more whole. I'm also a social worker, and the National Association of Social Workers Code of Ethics compels me to take a professional stance in defense of what is good for workers and clients that I work with. I know that the majority of my clients would not be able to wait for up to a year to recover what is lost from wages missed due to time for family leave. Caregiving is an important part of workers' lives and certainly is not limited to early parenting. Like me, many workers balance caring for family members and keeping their families afloat financially. It's good for our state when workers can do both. So I urge the committee to expand the conversation on paid family and medical leave program and give Representative Metz's bill a hearing in this session. I'd also like to add that I was briefly introduced to Representative Metz in the hall. I shared with him that I was raised in Minnesota, but have spent the last 7 years living in Washington State. I recently moved back. So in Washington State, legislation was recently introduced for a 12-week paid family leave legislation, and Representative Metz asked me if I knew who had introduced that legislation, and I said Republicans. So I'd also like to add that similar legislation has received bipartisan support in several other states. So I urge the committee to expand the conversation around paid leave.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Heiberg. And I know I speak on behalf of the entire committee when I say please do not allow your interactions with Representative Metz to reflect on the entire House of Representatives. We're not all like him, so thank you.
Thank you.
Todd Nicholson, you're next, and then Holly Larson. Holly, are you here? So you're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Anderson. I'm Todd Nicholson. I own a small business called SprayRack.com in Orono, Minnesota. And although I appreciate the recognition of the need for parental leave compensation, paid family leave policies polls very high among small business owners, this bill only provides a fraction of what is needed, however, and at a higher cost. It would also be a burden on taxpayers and would impose more paperwork for my small business. It would not provide any compensation until the next tax period, possibly months later. Virtually no workers can afford to float that much money for that long, nor can a lot of business owners. At the moment, our main employee who runs our assembly shop is convalescing at home after having a hip replacement. We treat him well, and we're still paying him, of course, but that's costing us a couple to a few thousand dollars and disrupting our operations. It was kind of difficult for me to be down here today because of this. But this program would still not have helped us take care of this situation. It would have only helped had he had a baby. And even then, it would not have helped enough. Not only does this bill not provide for enough time for a mother to be home with her new baby, it also doesn't provide for any help for an illness, a family member's illness, including the possible illness of the newborn baby in the coming months and years, or for someone to be there to care for a dying mother or father or spouse or child. It, of course, also would not help me or my employee when he needs a new hip. I can tell you that my business would not go through the hassle of even applying for the help this bill would offer. If we ended up qualifying, it would add to our already too complex administrative paperwork, and it would not provide enough for our employee. It would also add a burden to the taxpayers of Minnesota. The paid family leave bill that passed in the Minnesota Senate last year would have helped. It would have cost us less to provide more. It would have not added to our paperwork, and it would have paid for itself instead of adding more burden to the taxpayer. It, in fact, was the plan that polled so high with small business owners that I mentioned at the beginning. So I urge you to vote no on the passage of this bill, although I appreciate, again, the sentiment and recognition of the need for paid parental leave. It's just not providing enough, and it's at a higher cost for all. And if anyone would like a copy of the polling information, I have a bunch of copies here.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Larson, and then Angela, is it Bryn? Is that how you say it? Fern, you're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Holly Larson, and I live in Shoreview, Minnesota. Just want to thank you for your time. I'm speaking today as an individual Minnesotan who has seen my friends and my sister-in-law with new babies struggle to pay their bills while on unpaid leave, causing a lot of financial and emotional stress at a time of healing and joy. And as my husband Brian and I hope to have children in the next 2 years, this issue is really critical to my family. I recently saw on Care 11 they interviewed a mom in Plymouth who described the lack of paid parental leave as a crisis, and based on my friend's experience, I would agree. So I was really encouraged to see this bill come out and read it to see how it could help my family and my friend's families pay their mounting bills in the weeks and months following their child's birth. But I have to say, when I read and reread the bill to understand how it would work, my encouragement turned to disappointment. So I come to you before you with a lot of mixed emotions, because it's true that this bill is better than the current crisis situation, but there are a number of features that can be improved upon to help more Minnesotans, the first of which has already been discussed, the timing. When you're unpaid and child care can cost $400 a week for an infant at a basic center in the Twin Cities, you can't wait for a 25% tax credit that could come a year later. If I had a child right now, that's the circumstance I would be in. So I don't think that would help my family or others' families. The eligibility of employees. This bill doesn't apply to part-time workers, and it limits the other numbers of Minnesotans who need help. My read of how the two parts of the bill fit together is that if employer provides 2 weeks of paid family leave and uses the credit, the employee is not eligible to get any of the employee credit for their unpaid time off. And while 2 weeks helps, it's not enough to even cover the basic disability period of a new mother. Then how this bill works with existing paid leave an employee may have accumulated. My friends have had to manage the maze of short-term disability insurance, taxes, deductibles, FMLA, whether FMLA runs concurrently with existing paid leave or not, and so on. And a lot of my friends go into work sick to save their sick leave in the event that they have a child. And if they do that and use it under this bill, they wouldn't be able to get the full credit as if they hadn't done that. And either way, it doesn't reflect the reality of how employees manage each day of their sick leave and paid vacation, paid PTO. I'm hoarding it in the hopes that when I have a child, I can make it through my unpaid time off. I don't work for the government, but I don't know how the Department of Revenue would verify if an employee was on unpaid leave for parental leave purposes. My hours I work aren't reported on my W-2, and while I know that overall hours are reported in government, it's currently not reported, I believe, on if you took it for parental leave or some other FMLA purpose or some other reason. And just the amount of the tax credit is really important, because I appreciate, again, that it's better than what we have right now, but I tried to do the math in Subdivision 2 to understand how it would affect my family. And based on my calculations and the Department of Human Services Child Care Market Survey, I estimate my family would be eligible for the max equivalent of $280 a week as the credit for when I would be on paid leave. The math is pretty hard, so people should verify that, but that's my best attempt at figuring that out. If you make less than about $58,000, you would get less money than that. And, again, it's better than nothing, but a lot of families can't wait a year to get $280 tax credit when, again, the infant care is so expensive. So I would just say that I was fortunate enough to take time off today to share my story with you, but I know a lot of other families can't be here at 3 p.m. on a Wednesday. There's other solutions that are better with paid family leave bills that are growing around the country and the world, and that's what's going to help families most, not this bill. So I just leave the committee, if you do pass this bill along today, I ask you, remember, it's been 24 years since unpaid FMLA leave was passed, and I know Minnesotans can't wait another 24 years to have a real paid family leave. And just thank you for letting me share my story today, because it's so important to me and other young Minnesotans who are facing what should be a joyous time and is actually pretty scary. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Bruce Nordstrom, you're on deck. Angela? Oh, Bruce, you are on deck. Angela is next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Angela Byrne, and I'm a resident of Roseville. I'm here as the mom of a sharp and rambunctious 2-year-old named Henry. But I'm here today to speak about the financial costs that this little sharp and rambunctious 2-year-old cost me, and that every new parent faces when giving birth to or adopting a new child. As many parents, including my husband, Patrick, and I, we were not fully prepared for the sheer scope of the needs of our very typical baby. Despite our thorough pre-birth planning, there were daily trips to Target, There were three different trips to two different stores for an automatic swing because the first two were broken and we so desperately needed a robot to rock our son so we could rest. Many of the items we deemed vital to our survival, such as our robot rocker, as we affectionately called it, are luxuries to too many parents. Diapers, wipes, and formula alone cost a minimum of $40 per week, and that is for Target brand items. If a baby does not tolerate off-brand diapers or formula, such as our Henry, the cost increases to at least $50 or $60 per week. In my experience, bare minimum startup costs and feeding and diapering easily reaches $1,500 within the first 6 weeks. And that does not include luxuries like our robot rocker or a stroller or nursing bras or even toys and books for the child. I did bring a spreadsheet of where I have calculated the $1,500, and it is very conservative as far as what my husband and I put out for our child. And these costs do not even take into account any medical costs that new parents may be responsible for. The cost of my unplanned C-section at Regents Hospital was over $8,000. The total cost of my birth was over $31,000. Thankfully, I have good insurance through my employer, but many are not as lucky. Copays, deductibles, and or co-insurance percentages are often a large burden for folks bringing home a new child. After returning to work from unpaid leave, Minnesotans are struck with some of the highest daycare costs in the country. My mother is not retired, and my in-laws live out of state, so my husband and I need full-time daycare. My tuition at New Horizon Academy in Roseville was $400 per week when my son was an infant. That's $20,800 per year. That's 27% of the median family income of $76,500 for a typical family in Minnesota, according to the Economic Policy Institute. And we did not pick a high-end center. When we shopped for daycare, we found that our local KinderCare was the same price as New Horizon, and Kinderberry Hill, which was the closest daycare to our home, was $500 per week. My message to you today is that 25% wage replacement for up to 6 weeks is not enough. This hardly covers the bare minimum costs of having a child, let alone replace any income needed to pay rent or buy groceries. And to add insult to injury, new parents will have to wait months, if not over a year, to receive this tax credit. Bills and diapers, do not wait for tax credits. And the last I checked, Target does not take IOUs from the Department of Revenue. I'm here today on behalf of myself, but also for five other working parents who could not attend today, two of whom are pregnant and due this month. They are swamped trying to wrap up work in preparation for their leaves, one for a cold because she is saving her sick time for her leave. The others are unable to attend due to depleting their accrued paid leave after having their children. One couldn't leave early today because she has to leave early tomorrow for her daughter's doctor appointment. Another parent's son was sick with norovirus all last week, and she's still working to catch up. The common thread between all of us, though, is that we are hard workers, and we are doing the best with the resources that we have. But the ramifications of having a child with no paid parental leave extend for years into our careers. As a child of a working-class mother who struggled to make it paycheck to paycheck, and now, as a career mom myself, I can state unequivocally that this bill will not help new parents stay home with their children after birth or adoption. Additionally, I have a written statement from an employee of the state of Minnesota who recently returned from her leave after having the opportunity to take the 6 weeks of paid parental leave afforded to her on an interim basis. She stated, "It is my understanding that a tax credit has been proposed in lieu of a paid leave that would actually support a parent or parents of a new baby during the time that the parent is on leave. If such a tax credit had been in place while I was on leave in October through December, knowing that I would receive a tax credit after my taxes were filed in the spring, that would have had zero effect on my ability to stay home with my baby and recover from childbirth. Only a proposal that provides for benefits that a parent would receive during the time the parent is on leave would actually support new parents." I do have copies of her full statement, if that would be allowed. I also have copies of my statement as well as the extra spreadsheet. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. Bruce, and then David Weiss. David, are you here? David Weiss from Isaiah. Okay, so then Kate Schaefers from AARP. Are you here, Kate? You're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Bruce Nordstrom Loeb. I'm a retired professor from St. Olaf College. I appreciate the several previous speakers who've talked about the need for perhaps a more expansive parental leave bill. And my perspective to add to that is the time I spent in Norway a recent summer for the summer looking at parental leave policies in Norway, which is a country that has a similar amount of wealth per person as the United States. Both Norway and the United States are among the most wealthy countries in the world. But the U.S., in comparison to Norway, for example, is one of the few modern countries that doesn't yet have a paid family leave policy, unless you're lucky enough to be working for a particular corporation that will provide that. But there's nothing uniform provided for people as a whole. And yet, one of the biggest demographic changes in recent years, the last several generations worldwide, especially in modern economies, is the entry of women into the paid labor force. And as a result, trying to figure out how to juggle family and work for both husband and wife. It's not surprising, perhaps, that the United States, in a recent story in the Star Trib, the percentage of women who are in the labor force is 15th to 20th highest in the world. There's lots of countries who provide some kind of more robust paid family leave and have higher rates of labor participation, making it more easy for that to be managed, for that to be possible. In Norway, also, there's a special allotment just for dads, for parents who stay home, take a leave, which cannot be spent by the wife. So there's a certain amount that can go for either, but in Norway, just for men. And it's really begun to pull in a high percentage of men and giving them a sense for being involved in the family in a new kind of way. Just a couple of other things. One is that, for example, in Italy now, the birth rate is actually lower than it is in Norway, in spite of the fact that you would think our stereotypes would lead us to believe that the Italians would be easily out producing, have a higher fertility rate than the Norwegians might. But that's but no.
I can say something.
Continue with your testimony.
I think the Italians are now under 1.5 kids per family, and they're on the one hand they're feeling overwhelmed by illegal immigrants. On the other hand, they're not producing enough kids to fill the available jobs. And it's possible that that's a long range sort of a kind of a thing to be considering, I imagine. But the idea of what all these things mean in terms of how ordinary families make their decisions about can we afford to have another child at a time when both of us really need to be working given the economic conditions of our time is something to consider. So I wanted to add my voice to those who feel like a more expansive, more robust kind of family leave policy would eventually be important to consider, whether it's politically feasible at the moment. I don't know. That's for you to decide. But in the long run, I think that we'll probably have to join some of our brother and sister nations that have those kinds of policies in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Schaefer's and Jessica Anderson, are you here?
Yes.
You're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kate Schaefer's, and I'm volunteer president of AARP Minnesota. On behalf of our 660,000 members statewide, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 315, Representative Anderson's bill to provide tax credits for parental leave policies. AARP appreciates Representative Anderson's willingness to bring forth policies that begin addressing worker leave policies. However, this legislation falls short of offering relief that provides benefits to those most in need. First and foremost, we are concerned that this bill does not address the needs of aging population or offer relief to workers providing elder care. As the population ages, AARP believes it's important to start addressing policies to better support family caregivers. With the 65-plus age group expected to double by 2030, family caregivers increasingly provide care for their aging parents, siblings, and friends, most of whom have chronic conditions and wish to remain in their own homes and communities as they age. Others belong to the sandwich generation, caring for children and parents at the same time. In Minnesota, there are nearly 600,000 family caregivers caring for loved ones who are 18 or older. Family caregivers not only provide a critical role in helping older Minnesotans stay in their homes and their communities, but they also provide the bulk of long-term care in this country. The estimated economic impact of the unpaid care is over $4 billion in Minnesota alone.
Let me say it again
because I said it incorrectly, actually. The economic impact of this unpaid care is over $7 billion in Minnesota alone. Thank you for bringing me back to that. Without the support of family caregivers, more and more older people will be placed in costly nursing homes at a much higher cost to our state. AARP does support tax credits for family caregivers, but not as a substitute for paid family leave policies. For example, one approach for using tax credits is to help family caregivers who experience high out-of-pocket costs for caregiving expenses. AARP's recent report shows that, on average, family caregivers spent roughly $7,000 a year on out-of-pocket costs related to caregiving in 2016. It is our concern with this legislation that the tax credit may be too little and too late for low-wage workers who cannot forego wages. For older workers who often struggle to balance work and family caregiving responsibilities, it can create significant financial hardship, especially when caregivers lose income or leave the workforce due to these demands. Common costs with unpaid family caregivers include lost wages, lost pension, decrease in Social Security benefits, reduced hours or part-time status, or retiring early to care for a family member. We do believe that we need policies that can do both, provide guaranteed wage replacement, as well as tax relief that is targeted and can help those most in need. We appreciate the opportunity to continue working with policymakers on this very important issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jessica Anderson, and then Bernie Hesse. Bernie, are you here? You're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony and state your name for the record.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jessica Anderson. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. And at our organization, we pay particular attention to the needs of children who face a steeper ladder to success, which includes children living in families that can't afford to meet basic needs, and children of color and American Indian children. When new parents have access to paid parental leave, research shows it improves maternal health, child health, and also increases a father's involvement in his child's life. And every 10 weeks of paid parental leave is actually shown to decrease infant mortality by 10%. Despite the fact that most Minnesota children have their parents in the workforce, paid parental leave remains a luxury. Among women, for example, 1 in 4 returns to work within 2 weeks of having a baby. Those who are able to take longer leaves tend to be higher income earners, and those with shorter leaves tend to be lower income earners. The goal of the proposal before you should be to expand access to paid parental leave to those who are least likely to have it, including low-income workers, who also happen to be or tend to be women and people of color. Unfortunately, we're concerned that this proposal doesn't meet that goal. According to the American Enterprise Institute, similar tax credits for employers are proven to be ineffective at changing employer behavior. Therefore, we feel we can't expect that this tax credit would be any different and expand access to paid leave. The employee tax credit for unpaid parental leave in this legislation would be unworkable for those eligible for it. Half of Americans report they wouldn't be able to afford a $400 emergency expense if it came up. As you've heard multiple times already in this hearing, we feel low and mid-income families couldn't afford to wait till the end of the year for a small percentage of their wages to be replaced. So, Minnesotans deserve a solution that will work. Soon, for the third year in a row, you'll have the opportunity to hear the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act. It's a social insurance model that's been tested around the world. It's affordable, comprehensive in its coverage of a full spectrum of major life events. The model has bipartisan public support as well. With meaningful benefits and payout during the time leave is taken, it would make leave more affordable and accessible for the low-income families being left behind. So in conclusion, we appreciate that there's growing recognition that our current system is failing many children and the parents who love them. We hope you'll broaden your conversation on this topic by hearing the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act, and we look forward to working with you this session on moving this policy forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Bernie, and then Kim, is it Poole or Hooley? Kim from SEIU? Okay, you're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to testimony.
Chair, it's Bernie Hess. I'm with the Food and Commercial Workers Union. We represent workers in long-term care, food processing, retail groceries, some non-retail food, and some manufacturing. We're here today. We do not support House File 315. We're encouraged that the discussion has started about parental leave, but we need income support almost immediately when people take time off. We believe that paid leave is probably the route to go through an insurance program, and we actually think it would increase the percentage of women in the workforce if they knew this was an ongoing program. Paid leave helps people return to work. We also need time for us to join. I think it's time for us to join other industrialized nations with a program. Only 11% of American workers right now have access to paid family leave, and we've got to grow that. Paid leave, as some of the earlier speakers said, it reduces disparities in leave-taking between low-wage workers and high-wage groups. Paid leave will help us, if we have a program instead of a tax credit, I think will help workers because it's immediate and they can keep their households together and that sort of piece stringing things together. So we look forward to working with Representative Anderson down the road here. Perhaps we could think of some other way to approach this, but we really need paid leave. So thank you.
Thank you. Kim, and then Brad Leto? Brad, you're on deck. Hi, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kim Hooley. I am a resident of Richfield, Minnesota, and I'm here to tell you the story of Kim Hooley. I am a child of God. I'm a child of God, but I'm a child of Victor and Carol Mattson also, and I'm relatively certain each of us can claim to have a parent or two up the road. I was called into a caregiving role for my mother 3 years ago, as she began a decline in her seventh year of a double lung transplant that she received at Rochester Mayo. Hearing the call, moving her several times, I engaged my family, my community, my church, and my friends in helping to care for my mother in the last 2 years of her life. It literally takes a village. And had it not been for the sick leave that I had accumulated and was able to use, I would not have been able to attend her numerous doctor appointments, helping her to, you know, interpret the doctor's orders and the various care orders that were being passed between her and her nursing staff and the other caregivers being provided for her. And so it's with that that I come to you and I ask you that you please take a step back and reconsider this bill by Representative Anderson, that, you know, all families need to have access to this care. Giving care to our families is a fundamental value that Minnesotans share. And now as a parent to two young adult children, both climbing the ladders, if you will, I have a young son who is a graduate of the University of Minnesota climbing his ladder. I have a young son who is a tree trimmer climbing his ladder. But there is no guarantee that either of them would be able to take time off to care for my husband or myself if we were in a position to need family support. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Brad, and then Lisa Stratton.
Good afternoon, Chair Garofalo and committee members. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director and Chief of Staff at the Minnesota AFL-CIO. And we do appreciate Representative Anderson and other legislators' awareness that a growing number of working Minnesotans are struggling to make ends meet on their basic necessities, let alone be able to afford to take time off, work to bond with a new child.
Yeah, thank you.
Unfortunately, House File 315, we believe does little to help working families be able to afford the cost of taking time off of work to care for a new child. Very, very few workers have the ability to front the money to take time off for birth or adoption of a child, not to mention the bill, as others have eloquently stated, doesn't even address caring for an ill family member, which I had to do recently. So what does a worker do when a family member falls ill or has a serious health condition? That's still up here. Tax credits for workers or employers will not replace the need for a robust paid family medical leave insurance program, as has been mentioned in a proposal that passed the Senate in 2016. That bill did provide both parental and family leave. Such a proposal would provide real coverage for working families and help small businesses throughout the state to be able to afford to provide the coverage. Additionally, I guess I just have to ask what reduction in government services or what taxes or whose taxes will increase elsewhere to pay for this tax credit. We all know tax credits are not free. In closing, working Minnesotans can't afford to wait until tax season to care for a new baby. Working families cannot afford to wait until they do their taxes to obtain a small credit. Again, while the Minnesota AFL-CIO appreciates the legislature's growing recognition that at least paid parental leave is needed, unfortunately, we don't believe House Bill 315 works for working families and would appreciate you a no vote. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Lisa Stratton. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Stratton, and I'm an attorney and a co-founder of a nonprofit organization based here in St. Paul called Gender Justice. We do advocacy in different arenas, all of which is geared toward eliminating barriers and inequalities based on gender. So I come before you today with that perspective in mind, and as others have said, thinking about our job, we see our job as advocates in helping you in coming up with creative solutions to big societal problems like the one everyone has testified about, the need for paid leave or some way for new parents and children of the elderly. All of us, basically almost all of us, will at some point in our lives need to take time away from work to care for someone else who depends upon us. And those caretaking responsibilities, I think it's been pretty well established in all of our anecdotal lives probably tell us, is disproportionately done by women. And those two facts together and the fact that women are now increasingly, particularly in Minnesota, a very, very large percentage of women in Minnesota, especially women with young children, are in the workforce. Our workforce participation as Minnesota women is one of the highest in the country on the state level. So we know that women are working. We know they have young children when they're working. We know they go back to work very quickly after having babies and in many cases struggle to be available to those children as they grow up and as they have anticipated illnesses and sicknesses. They're often also on demand by the aging, and we count on women to bear those responsibilities disproportionately as well. Given those things, it's incredibly important that we recognize that bills like this, there is an incredible need, as everyone has testified to, and I commend Representative Anderson for trying to address it, to relieve the impact on women's wages. It's one of the major contributors to this huge wage gap that's been so well documented that keeps women at best for white women who have the closest ratio to men, 80% of what a white man earns on average. So we need to address this problem in a way that is serious, that is comprehensive, and that is inclusive, covering small groups of people, covering only people who may already have the benefit, and covering it in ways that doesn't actually give employers an incentive, as Jessica Anderson just testified, to actually add this benefit if they weren't offering it already, does not take us very far. And the other thing that I happen to be is an unemployment lawyer. I've been an employment law litigator for 20-plus years. So when I read these bills, I immediately go to, how is this going to work? So I have a couple of comments on that, too. The limitations of this bill are pretty evident, and some have spoken to already, that it only applies to parental leave. It doesn't even apply, even if you're looking to particularly provide a benefit for women who are having children and out of the workplace, it doesn't even provide for pregnancy-related medical conditions. It's simply the parenting leave after a child is born or adopted. It does not apply, the way I read it, it only applies to hourly workers. In other words, anyone who is a professional or administrative and is exempted from the wage and hour laws, the way I read the definitions here, this would not apply to. There's a little lack of clarity there because there is something about prorating numbers of hours for salaried workers, but if at best that's an inconsistency, and in the stated intent in the definitions is to only apply to those that wage and hour law applies to. And setting up this rather complicated and bifurcated system would be, in my opinion, very difficult to implement. There are unanswered questions about how you can have this dual scheme where you have, on the one hand, employers getting a tax credit if they provide the minimum benefit of 2 weeks of paid leave per year. And I do want to comment on my favorite thing in this bill, which is that it's at 100% pay. That's wonderful. But it is just 2 weeks. And if the employer offers that minimum of 2 weeks fully paid, the employee is then not eligible for any of the tax credit that employees can get. So you have a system where if the employer takes the tax credit, the employee can't. And how does the employee know what its employer, his employer, is taking for tax credits? And when do we measure that? Is it the prior tax year, whether the employer took it or not? Do they need to make some kind of announcement to their employees so that their employees will know when they try to plan for, as we all do, to try to calculate what we've got available? So I think there are some very confusing things about how this system would be implemented. And the bottom line is it doesn't cover very many people. It doesn't cover them in a meaningful way for low-income people who can't afford to front it, but that's been well spoken to already. But it's not comprehensive, it's not inclusive, and it would be extremely difficult to implement. So thank you for hearing today from me.
Mr. Just a very specific question to the testimony.
I think that this is going to be the last testifier, but let me just double check. So this is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion. We'll move to member questions. Representative Thiessen.
Yeah, just thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. So the amendment, did that amendment go on yet?
Yes, the AY amendment.
So it's not 100%, it's 25%, I think, as amended. So the thing you really like is not in there anymore?
I wanted to say something positive, Representative Thiessen.
I just want to clarify that for you.
Yes, and I appreciate that. I didn't fully incorporate the amendment into my testimony. Thank you.
So first, anything else, Representative Thiessen?
Well, later, but
okay. We'll go with Metzen, Makewade, Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and with a little leeway, I'd appreciate the opportunity to speak again potentially at the end. Are we leaving? Do we have enough time for that if other questions pop up as we're answering questions?
There's always time for you to talk, Representative Metzen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I'm not going to put it up for a vote to the committee, just so you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't ask for a roll call on it then either. I was wondering if Mr. McElroy could come back up.
Mr. McElroy, if you want to come down? And if you testified, if you could, maybe just kind of gravitate towards the first row so if someone asks you. Yeah. You can turn your cell phone and put your cell phone in a vibrate state.
Representative Metzen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dan, I know we worked on a lot of legislation together and the past and supporting some good causes, and so it kind of excited me to know that the Restaurant Association wanted to take this on. Could you provide the committee with a list of the restaurants who want to offer this benefit to their employees? So we can notify our constituents that they might have this opportunity coming?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metzen, not at this time, although that may be possible in the future as we know exactly what the bill will look like. There has been some publicity that various restaurants have had over improving benefits to continue attracting, hiring, and retaining employees, so the market's working in favor of that. But I will tell you, we had a unanimous vote of our board to adopt a position in support of a tax credit approach.
Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so it would be fair to say that the Restaurant Association and any member within my district, and I've got that list already, I could send out and notify their employees with comfort saying that the association is supportive of getting them parental leave credit and that they should inquire with their employer as to how to best get that done.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metzen, I would advise against that, although you can always communicate with your constituents. Parental leave will fit with some employers and not with others. It will happen quickly with some employers, and it will take longer with others.
Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So only the board is in approval of this?
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, at the time we, and Mr. Chairman, the time we took a position, there wasn't the bill yet. So we didn't have details as to what would be proposed. We're also exploring kind of the emerging option of short-term disability insurance, which wasn't a very good product a few years ago. It gets better every year. We'll continue to get better. So at the time we took a position in principle, I didn't have a bill to show to our members.
Representative Betza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if I were to be able to prove to you that the bill that I carried last year for paid family and medical leave were actually less expensive for many of your employers in an insurance program, would you give me that same opportunity to say you're supportive and move forward in the idea that it could cost the same amount or less?
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metzler, we certainly read, reviewed, considered the bill you presented last year. Have some concerns about both the cost to set it up, to build the computer system it would take to run it, and to operate it. But if it does move forward, be happy to ask our board to take a look at it again. We're always looking for good ideas, Representative Metzler.
Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. I don't think that answered my question, though. If the bill was the same cost, would you support it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metzler, probably not, because we're very concerned about additional mandates. Our members have coped with a long list of mandates over the last few years, and they like the ability to run their own businesses, to make their own decisions, to take on their own costs, and so things that are optional are often more attractive to them. But I would be happy to bring the proposal to their attention again if it's brought forward.
Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. That will be it for Mr. McElroy.
Representatives Makewade and then
I've got a couple other questions, though.
Oh, okay. Well, Representative Metzler, you're on question number six, and realize I'm going to keep calling on you regardless of the number of members of your caucus who want to speak after you.
Well, thank you,
Mr. Chair. You have a hard deadline. So, Representative Metzler.
I know they love to hear me talk, Mr. Chair. So is the chamber here, Mr. Chair?
Is there anyone here from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce who, I know they did not testify. I don't see anyone. Representative Metzler?
I would just be interested, Mr. Chair, if we could please get a chamber response to see if their position was supportive of this bill.
Do you want me to recess until they come back? Or?
We could get it in writing to the committee. That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We'll certainly solicit that from them. Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I know that when we're looking at this, if it were enacted today, and this, I guess, would be more for you, Representative Anderson, or Mr. Michael, who I see in the office here, or in the audience here, if this were enacted today, all the companies that are currently offering paid leave, or paid parental leave more specifically, to their employees, would this benefit be for new expansions of that program, as you've stated in your testimony earlier, that this was to get people willing to incentivize expanding this program and disqualify people who already have this benefit from currently to date from receiving it?
Representative Anderson, or I see Mr. Michael. I don't even know if he wants to answer the question, but I just want him to come to the table just so people can get introduced to him, but Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Metzler. As it's currently drafted, it would be for anyone that offers the benefits, but I'm happy to work with you if you want to limit it just to those that opt in after a certain date.
Representative Metzler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So is your incentive, is your, I guess, as you're working on this then, is your intent to have this qualify for people who are already giving it? Essentially, some of our, you know, Targets, Cargills, 3Ms, with credits that they could receive for something they're already offering, or would it be for expanding to their members who are actually the cashiers, the frontline workers of the business? Would those be the people that you intend on getting that to with this tax credit?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Metzler. As I mentioned earlier, it currently is drafted. It would be to anybody that provides that benefit, but we can certainly limit it, and I'm happy to work with you if you are looking to limit it to those that only provide the benefit from a date certain.
Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that'll be it for now.
Representative Mayquaid and then Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I have a few questions, but they come from constituents, and they're coming in right now. The first one is for folks who have two or more part-time jobs that do not offer parental leave, would this bill cover them?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, it is my understanding that it would, but Mr. Michael could probably verify, or Mr. Weeks could verify as well.
We get to hear from Mr. Michael. Come on up, Mr. Michael.
Yes.
And please be sure to introduce yourself so we know who you are, sir.
Do you just want him to have to testify in your committee?
I do, actually, yeah. I've made it now. I'm done.
Joel Michael from House Research. The bill provides two, as I think it's been noted before, it provides two different tax credits. There's the employer tax credit and the employee tax credit. The employee tax credit, which is probably the more relevant one that you're thinking about, it does require that an eligible employee be a full-time employee for a minimum of 9 out of the 12 months preceding the date on which the unpaid leave was taken. And being a full-time employee means that you have to have worked 30 or more hours per week. It doesn't specify that you have to work for the same employer, so it's unclear as to whether that would apply. I think you could, since this is an employee that's applying for the credit through their own tax return, I think you could argue that if you're working two part-time jobs that aggregate and meet the 30 hours per week for the 9 out of 12 of the preceding months, that you would be a full-time employee even though you're not working for the same employer. That goes somewhat counter to sort of the normal thought process that one has, that you assume that full-time employee means that you're working 30 hours or more for the same employer, but the language of the bill doesn't explicitly limit it that way. And I think, you know, it'd probably be a, it's the kind of thing that the committee could clarify if you wanted to eliminate the ambiguity, but I think the best reading now is that you would probably qualify. For the employer credit, I don't believe that there's a full-time requirement, but you only get the credit on the foregone wages, and that depends upon what you would have foregone before. So I think probably does the employer credit probably does apply to part-time employees, because it doesn't explicitly, it's not explicitly limited to full-time employees.
Mr. Weeks, do you wish to elaborate on that? You can just say no. That's all right. Oh, okay. Representative Mayquaid, any follow-up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I had another constituent question, Representative Anderson. So we're talking about a full-time employee that could be two part-time jobs, apparently, for a minimum of 9 out of the 12 months. I have a constituent who is a seasonal worker, so her job changes often, and she's in the process of adopting, which it doesn't always have a hard and fast date. So if she was adopting a child and was not at an employer for more than 9 months, she would not be covered by this bill.
Can you say that last part again? There was a cough and I couldn't hear.
Sorry. She's in the process of adopting. It's a long process, and there's no hard and fast, here's when you will finish that process. So if she moved employers, and then the adoption was finalized or the child was placed with them and she hadn't worked with them for 9 months, she would not be covered with this bill?
That is correct.
Representative Anderson. Any other follow-ups, Representative Fitzgerald?
Yes, I do. Last one is from a small business owner. They have an employee that makes about $9.50 an hour, so that's about $760 for the 2 weeks. And with a 25% credit, and I want to make sure I'm getting this right, that'd be like $190 that they'd get back in a tax credit, correct? About, if the math is right.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, it would depend upon how much of their wages were foregone if they took the full 6 weeks if they wanted to. So it would all depend upon all of those different caveats. So
I think
Representative Makeway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the piece that the small business owner was getting to is this to incentivize more businesses to take part in this, or is it to give benefit to businesses who are already doing this.
Is that a question or a statement?
That was, yes.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It is, as I mentioned to Representative Metza, if you're concerned that this would go to businesses that already provide this as a benefit and you don't want to see that happen, I'm happy to work with you and Representative Metza on that issue and to address that if that's your concern. Because certainly my motivation for this is to incentivize businesses to offer this as a benefit to their employees.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with the question that from the constituent, it was more if they're not already offering the benefit, it'd be very expensive to do so, and the credit back is not offsetting their cost. I think the last piece is from the original person I was talking about, the full-time employee. Would the burden be on the employee to verify that they're the full-time employee, or how would one go about doing that?
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative McQuaid, this is going through your individual income tax.
Okay.
And so they're having W-2 forms that they're submitting, so that verifies it for them. And Mr. Michael will correct me if I'm wrong in that.
Mr. Michael.
As Chair and members of the committee, as Representative Anderson said, it's going to be a matter of the taxpayer filling out the tax form and correctly claiming the credit, and if they're audited by the Department of Revenue, having some sort of documentation that's adequate to back up that claim. And so, W-2 information doesn't have hours worked. It's not exactly clear how you would precisely document this, but, so it's going to be a matter for the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue.
Representative McQuaid.
Okay, so to be clear, the burden would be on the taxpayer themselves to keep documentation about all of the hours that they worked.
Right. Mr. Michael.
Area.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Representative McQuaid.
That was my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the author, thanks for opening this can of worms. I've got some questions about how equitable this program would be for a variety of families in the state of Minnesota. When the state of Minnesota enters into sponsoring and administering a program such as this, it's got to be applied to all the citizens. I'm just wondering, how does this affect a dairy farmer family up in northern Minnesota that's self-employed and all of a sudden they're stay-at-home mom, that type of thing, and they received nothing, but as a taxpayer in Minnesota, they're actually sponsoring this program as well.
And Representative Anderson, would there be a difference if they sold raw milk or not as well? Is that
That's a question about the equity here. And then another on that line, if I were an employer and wanted to go through the process of hiring employees, would I be discriminating against single employees, discriminating against families, married couples? Why would you hire a married person? Because you know this is coming quite possibly. Or would you hire an Italian person that's going to have 1.5 children rather than maybe somebody with religious followings that produce numerous children in a family? I'm just thinking this could be a real mess for an employer to administer this over the course of a year.
Representative Sunita, for the record, the Garofalo family in St. Paul, Catholic Italians, my grandma and grandpa, God rest their souls, had 16 children. So the Italians are doing their part. So
question to the chair, how would the other 15 turn out?
My dad, wasn't me. Representative Anderson, to those questions, and we'll just keep the Italian heritage stuff off the table for now, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin. On the dairy farmer question that you had, it depends upon the dairy operation. Many dairy operations do have employees, and they operate as any regular business would be. So if they had employees, they would be eligible for the tax credit benefit if it was not provided by the dairy operation. So it all depends upon how they're set up as a business overall. And then your second one, I wasn't quite sure I was following you. Can you reiterate to me what it is that you're asking?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if I were an employer, would I be prone to discriminate against an employee that might be prone to have 10 kids rather than 1.5 just to administer all of this?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sundin. Current federal law prevents that from happening. You have job protection under the Family Medical Leave Act.
Yeah. Representative Sundin.
Okay, thank you very much. Just moving on to another concern, there's hundreds of thousands of construction workers in the state of Minnesota that might be working for several different employers during the course of the year. I was one of them. I think it was 1992. I set a personal record of 7 different employers in 1 year, and I never got fired either. So, but just you know, how would this program apply to somebody that was in that position? I guess.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sundin. As we had the conversation earlier with Representative May Quaid. It wouldn't matter how many different jobs that you have because you are the individual that is filing the claim on your individual income tax, and so it would be based upon that and not if you have part-time job or that you've skipped around from different employers from that perspective.
Okay.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if there's a better system, you know, where we could look to other states if there's a way to accumulate credits as a employee as you go from employer to employer or you, even if you're on a steady worker in one business. So I think this needs a lot of work yet before we get going on it. I don't know what Mr. Representative Metz has got here. I probably have some of the same concerns with his bill as well. So thank you.
Representative Moran and MPC.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this question is for Mr. McEnroe. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. McEnroe. I have a few questions. I think, Mr. McEnroe, if I can remember, you open up your statement by saying that you survey, I think, 25 or 30 small businesses, and you ask them what keep you up at night? Is that, what's your opening statement?
Mr. McEnroe.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran, we had a meeting of members today, and I asked the question, you know, what issues are you worried about? And I probably paraphrased. And the two responses were keeping and recruiting great team members and dealing with government mandates.
Okay. What are you worried about? Mr. Chair, what are you worried about? Yes. And so, you know, when I hear that statement, you know, this issue around paid family leave, medical leave is, like, very hot issue. It is very, very concerning for many middle-class family, working-class family, low-wage workers, right? Because we know our parents are aging. We know that, you know, mothers are having, families are having babies. We know the cost of child care. So this is a really serious issue or concern. And so when I think about that, and I think about the restaurant industry, you know, waitresses, waiters, who are often low-wage workers who rely heavily on tips. And when I hear that the business association, and you say one of the things that you want to have is, or is to be able to track and keep good employees. And then I wonder that, you know, you support a bill, right, that we hear over and over again with, I mean, no waitress or waiter can wait a year, right, first. It's just like it just doesn't make sense, right? But You are supporting a bill that wouldn't allow you to keep good employees, when they're sick, when they need to take care of a baby, and you don't have time off. So can you help me understand how and why? And I heard you say you want to be independent in the mandates, but you also say you wanted to keep good employees. So can you just kind of like just talk a little bit more about how the two go together?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moran, as this bill, and as Representative Anderson has indicated, there may be other changes in this bill. We have had tax credit approaches, as the one that has been used in the Affordable Care Act, that are faster than a year, and so that could change. My members support the tax credit approach because they see it as more flexible than a mandate approach and as a beginning or a start to improving targeted benefits for employees that are important to them. We often worry that there are sometimes we let perfect solutions be the enemy of good starts.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Moran.
So this is really about the business owners and not about the employees. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that.
Okay. I didn't hear that response. Did you?
He says it's really about the business owners and not so much about employees.
Well, Mr.
I didn't hear you.
Hold on.
He should have said it. He said yes.
Mr. McElroy, would you like to state your own words so that other people aren't stating them for you?
It is a little hard to separate the interest from employers and employees. My members support this approach. This bill hadn't been written at the time that we took this position in October for a variety of reasons, as I have indicated, not just because it's good for their businesses, but because it's good for their employees, who are then more likely to continue with them.
Mr. Chair, so have you had a meeting with employees to see how they feel about what is best for them to maintain their employment with the restaurant industry?
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, the first answer is no. And the second answer is what an interesting trade associations rarely get that opportunity. Our member employers have the opportunity to contact their employees. And some may choose to have that conversation. It hasn't occurred as yet. We've known about this bill for just a few days.
Okay, Mr. McElroy.
Thank you, Representative
Moran. And so to the author of the bill, there has been a lot of conversation around this issue. And, you know, and we know whether you are middle class, working class, or lowest wage worker, this is concerning. And so I was just wondering, as you, how did you come up with this idea for this bill?
Representative Anderson.
Well, Representative Moran, this has been a couple ways. I serve on the tax committee. I don't know if you know that. And on the tax committee, we discuss incentives all the time in changing behavior within the state. And there's many different ways to do it. And the governor himself has talked about using taxes as a way to change behavior or to motivate someone to do one thing or another. And I'll take, for example, the working family tax credit. And that is meant to help individuals who are working and give them that incentive to work as well. And this is just another way of doing it, but it's in a different issue area. So as a state, we have done this kind of policy for many different things, working family tax credit, education. We have the K-12 tax credit. You have even the historic structure tax credit to encourage people to save historic structures. I mean, there's a whole list of different tax credit benefits that we do, and it's with the aim of encouraging people to do one thing or another. And that's what this bill does.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as you think about this in other ways that we have given working families a tax credit, and as you listen to what families need and gather information about the impact that when someone takes time out off without pay to take care of a child or an aging parent, that they're not getting paid for that. And trying to wait a year to claim a tax credit at 25% of your pay may not be the most doable option. You know, I was just looking at, you know, we kind of like glazed over Mr. Michelson, as he talked about what small business owners are willing to do. You know, and so we didn't pass this document out, but it stated that in 2016, MSA surveyed 1,572 small business owners across the country, and they surveyed small business owners in Washington, Oregon, San Diego, Minnesota, Ohio, Iowa, Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Maine, Florida, Connecticut, and Washington, D.C. This is kind of like a national movement. And within that, the question was, would you support or oppose a paid medical family leave policy? Example, a family act that is funded through a small payroll tax for the employer and employee. Small business support of a national pay or family leave policy like the family act. And, you know, as a business owner, You know, it's good to hear from a business owner themselves, right, of how it's going to impact them. And I would like you to extend on your conversation about that.
Did you have a question for Mr. Michelson?
Yeah, I want him to, if he can just extend on, as a small owner, why he sees something different from the current bill that we have in front of us.
Mr. Michelson.
The reason that so many small businesses are in support of something very similar, actually, to Representative Metz's bill in the House and a bill that was passed through the Senate last year in Minnesota, is because it would cost very little and provide quite a lot. It would provide all of the things we've been talking about here today, including, you know, paid sick time off for the employee themselves or to take care of a family member, including their child or their spouse or mother or father. And it would provide more time off for maternity leave and paternity leave, and it would be really pretty easy for most small businesses. My small business has less than 10 employees, and something like a really high number, I can't remember, but really high, like something like 85 or 90% of Minnesota businesses have less than 10 employees. And this would provide for it. When you do the numbers, it comes to approximately the same price as a cup of coffee a week to provide that for your employee, and then your employee pays the same amount as well. So that would help us a lot to, you know, if I have somebody who's considering a job with a larger corporation who can already afford to provide, you know, other things that are a lot more difficult for small businesses to provide, like paid family leave, instead of telling them, well, I can afford to buy you a cup of coffee every week, I can instead tell them, well, I can give you full paid family and medical leave for the same price. And that's why so many small businesses support it.
Representative Moran.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in your professional experience or expertise as a small business owner, do you believe that in order to keep and maintain good employees, that a bill like what was in the Senate and what was passed in the Senate would be more durable to create a good workforce?
Representative, what is the bill that passed the Senate? I've heard this referred to several times. What is this bill that passed the Senate last session?
I'm going to refer that to maybe Metsa. Maybe
Representative Anderson. Or Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was a bill that Senator Bach and the DFL majority over there last year prioritized and passed. It did not pass and become law, however. It passed through the process.
Hold on. Representative Anderson. Hold on, Representative Anderson.
Well, I'm looking at the bill right now online. It's Senate File 2558, and it only went to taxes. So unless they tacked it on to something else, the bill itself did not pass unless they did it as an amendment to something.
We want to stay on point of the debate here. I just want to make sure when people are referring to another bill, and so when people are talking about the Senate bill from last session, my recollection was is that that didn't happen, but it doesn't really matter.
It did go through the committee process every step of the way and ended up in the tax bill because that was the funding mechanism to enact all the language needed to create the accounts under my bill.
Okay, so we're back on topic. Now, Representative Moran, do you have any other questions?
So final question. I think you were getting ready to respond.
Michelson. The bill, and again, maybe we can refer to it more as the current Metsa bill in the House. It would be extremely helpful for us. Like I said, right now, one of my main employee, or my main employee is right now off of work, and we're paying him out of our own pockets, basically, as small business owners. Full paid family and medical leave bill, like what Representative Metsa is trying to get a hearing for, would help us be able to do that. It would not cost us $3,000 for our employee to get a new hip. It would cost us the price of a cup of coffee a week.
So your testimony, sir, is that you're in favor of a statewide payroll tax increase on all employees and businesses?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
So, one of the things, Mr. Chair, one of the things that I know we all, want to do is not just do something that's going to be costing and doesn't have an impact. And so as we move forward, I hope we keep that in mind that, these are tax dollars and something's going to cost more and have a less of impact and doesn't make a difference in real working people's lives. I think we need to just think a little bit more about how we can create a solution that works.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has this been done anywhere else?
Representative Anderson, Mr. Michael. I think we're done with you, Mr. Michelson. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I am not aware. I haven't checked if other states have done it for this piece. I do know that other states have proposed other options. It was referenced earlier about the state of Washington. And if you're not familiar with their situation, they're similar to Minnesota. They do not have a system in place that would provide short-term disability insurance benefits like the other states that provide that. And so Washington wanted to go ahead and create their own system of insurance for this. And in 2008, the Democratic governor at that time suspended it because it was becoming too cost prohibitive for them to set up a system in order to collect the payroll taxes necessary to pay for the program.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. And I guess I feel like we've pretty much exhausted the topic, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I think so. We're well beyond that.
I'll let the rest of the questions go.
You're the greatest. Representative Dabney.
He's gone.
Oh.
Oh, here he is. Okay.
Representative Mahoney. No. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been listening to the debate, and I'm going to chide my friends around the table, and I think I'm going to chide my friends in the audience as well, on too narrow a focus as we chew over this issue. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, the federal government, in 2015 reported that 40% of the workforce is contingent, folks not working a straight job. That's agency temps. That's Teresa, who lives across the alley and three doors down from me. That's folks who are on call. I did that for a couple of years while I was in the legislature, working casual status for somebody else. Independent contractors, that's my buddy Steve. Independent contractors, heck, that's my wife. We'll move on. Self-employed, that is my buddy Steve. And part-time folks, that's Jennifer, who's the mom of one of my son's buddies. Representative Anderson, looking at the bill, I don't see anything here for 40% of the workforce. Am I not reading your bill correctly?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, first of all, you're using 40% of the workforce on a national level. So first you have to look at the state of Minnesota, and of those that are self-employed individuals or independent contractors, as you mentioned it. But again, I'm happy to work with it. If you're concerned about people that are self-employed, we're happy to work with you on language that would potentially apply the tax credit to those folks. However, that's not the intent of this legislation. The intent of this legislation is to incentivize businesses to provide this as a benefit. But I understand your concern and happy to work with you on it.
Representative
Denny. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I guess I'm more focused on the individuals, the parents in this parental leave, since it's narrowly targeted just parental leave, getting the needs of themselves and their child met. And I'm thinking that this didn't take in the breadth of the workforce when you developed it. So I'd urge you to consider that.
Representative Baker. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, as an employer, first of all, thanks for bringing this forward, Representative Anderson. I didn't think we were kind of ready for this. Here's what I like about this: it's flexible, it's a starting point, and as a small employer, it's opening the door to what I think a lot of us need to keep working on and talking about in the small businesses that we all work in, many of us do. But it gets the conversation going to get this thing moving forward. And what's interesting, what I'm hearing the comments around the table is you're frustrated because it's not enough. I get it. It's not enough. I want you to understand as an employer what I'm concerned about is if you go too hard, too fast, it's going to flip upside down, and we're not going to get the results we want because we're going to have such a huge startup cost with them, kind of referring to maybe the bill that we're talking about last year, an enormous amount of work, and a lot of people are going to pay this payroll tax, and many people will not use it. They'll never get the benefit from it, and so I'm concerned that that's not the perfect plan either. So what I want to do today was, I think this is a great starting point. I think, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Restaurant Association, and I congratulate Dan and the board to be bold enough to kind of support this, and let's get moving with this conversation. Let's get it started. It's a starting point. And so I guess I think it's a good thing. I'd like to see who at the table was ready to step up and say, let's do this. Mr. Chair, I'd like to call for a roll call on this, because I'd like to see where this is going to end up with. Are we going to move forward, or are we going to sit in the hole? So I think this is a good starting point, and I just want to say thanks for getting this going. I'm still apprehensive and nervous because I don't know what it's all going to do, but I'm willing to start this out. So thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing it up.
So it goes Mahoney, Metza, Representative Anderson. You'll get the last word, and then we'll vote. Representative Mahoney.
I've got a question all written out here, but I want to go back to the Italians and the lack of reproductive fortitude.
16.
We're rapidly moving away from being one of the leading economic powers. It just started about a month ago, but we have been the leading economic power in the world, and one of our biggest problems is we're looking at a workforce shortage in the next 10 to 20 years. And we make it more and more difficult for young families, women, to have children. So I guess this is a start. But we better do something drastic to help families replace themselves. This is going to be a problem that we will be facing or are facing right now. But my real question for Representative Anderson is that you brought around this table and people have brought things up and you said, well, I'm happy to work with you. I think I've heard it like nine times now.
So my real question is, when you bring a bill of this magnitude, I mean, this really affects 50% of the people, and well, I guess it affects 100% if you include us men, but it really affects 50% of the population of our state. And when we bring those kind of bills forward, we typically work with multitudes of groups, and I'm just wondering, have you worked with any of the advocacy groups that have talked about paid medical leave or paid maternity leave? And I didn't want to even get any farther than paid maternity leave. But have you worked with any of those groups to talk, run the bill by them, got their ideas on it, taken anything, or was this a bill that you sat down with House Research and put together from your experience on the Tax Committee?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mahoney. This legislation, I had the benefit, and maybe people that have been working on this issue longer did not have the benefit of the study that the University of Minnesota put out on the issue of paid family leave and other issues as well that was covered in there. And so I had the opportunity to read through that report and what it recommended. And I've also spent significant time looking at what other states offer, how they were able to do it, and what the cost would be to the citizens. And when I look at this issue in particular, I see this bill as an opportunity to offer or incentivize coverage to people that they currently don't have. And if there is a way that we can do it with a carrot instead of a bludgeon, which, you know, other proposals that are out there would be a significant tax increase on employees. They would be paying money out of their pocket for this benefit, and some would be paying for it without any benefit from it. And so I looked at it and said, based upon all of this feedback from the report, from what other states have done, we could maybe do this with an incentive instead. And I feel fortunate that I've been able to serve on the tax committee and look at the different tax credit programs that we have in the state. It runs the gamut from renter's tax credit, the property tax refund, the working family tax credit, the K-12 tax credit. There's a whole host of tools out there. And I looked at this as an opportunity for us to do this for this area of Minnesota.
Representative Mahoney.
So in other words, no, you haven't talked to any of the groups or any of the people. You've read one report or two reports or even a dozen reports, and you've looked at what other states have done, but you have not talked to the people who you were trying to help. I know you were trying to get around answering my particular question, so I just had to answer it for you.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Mahoney. First off, I have a personal experience with it. As you know, I'm a mother. And I know lots of moms in my district across the state. So I don't think you always have to go to an interest group that has a paid lobbyist that comes here to the Capitol. You can actually talk to real citizens and hear their concerns about it. And so I get their feedback on a regular basis, and I am blessed that my door is always open. So even if you are from an organization that has a paid lobbyist here, you're welcome to come to my office anytime and express your concerns on whatever bill it may be.
Representative Mahoney.
I guess we're going to get into it here. So this bill was crafted by talking to the moms in your district who came to you and said, we really should have a tax credit if I have a child, rather than, and I don't care which group you talk to, because I suspect if you talk to the restaurant groups or the hotel groups, this being more focused on low-income families, but even the moderate-income families, that they would have come up with other ideas, and I don't want to diminish the input that our constituents give us, because they give us really good ideas. Most of the good ideas I've got have come from constituents, and then I've had to sit down with
House Research and some of the advocacy groups that kind of have an idea on it. So I am surprised that you haven't talked to any of the groups that have been working on this particular issue for 8 to 10 years, but decided to sit down with the revisor's office and come up with a tax credit that really only helps upper middle class or wealthy or businesses. It doesn't really help low income, doesn't help moderate income, because even at $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000, if you're off work and you're getting 25% of your salary 6 months, 9 months down the road, when most families in America don't have $400 for an emergency need at the moment, your bill, I won't be cynical about your bill, but I could easily be. But I don't think your bill gets to the concern and the problem that we as a nation, we as a state are facing. And I wish you would talk to some of the groups that think we could find a better way.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question about process here. So if there are significant changes that would be in the jurisdiction of this committee, would it be the intent as this bill moves forward, as we've talked about many changes coming, would we get an opportunity to review it again in this committee before it heads to the floor?
Representative Metza, that would depend upon, number one, the changes that are made, number two, where the changes were made, and number three, who agreed to them. So, these things happen in conference committee, or if they're not substantive in nature, that would be at the discretion of the chair. So, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, if it, say, goes to taxes next, and there are policy changes that have jobs, would it be your intent to hear the jobs portion of that again?
Representative Metza, you've been around here long enough to know it's a speculative question, and I can only offer a speculative answer.
Okay.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think I can skip one question for the sake of time today. Just one clarification for a comment that Representative or Chair Anderson had made earlier, and this would not have job protection for people who are employed by folks in companies who are 21 or under FMLA. And so any of those smaller businesses would be fully capable of using this benefit and giving it to their employee and then firing them without any repercussion once they've had a child. So I think that's something we could look at and add in here. And, I'm curious, for a lot of our small businesses, and we talk about Main Street, a lot of sole proprietors out there who are working hard to feed their families. If you're a sole proprietor, do you file as an employer or an employee? How does that work in your bill, Representative Anderson?
Representative Anderson?
Chair, thank you. I think that this is probably an area of the bill that we might have to modify if that's your intent. However, as I mentioned earlier, the intent of this legislation is for employers to provide this as a benefit to their employees, as well as giving a benefit to the employees themselves. So I'll have to take a look at that, and I can get back to you on it.
Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I think, this kind of goes in line, Representative Baker, with some stuff that you had just stated in unfunded mandate. As taxpayers, if we're giving out a tax credit, don't we actually pay for that same thing too? And just in doing some rough math, expecting a child soon, actually this month, pretty exciting and scary. My wife actually butt dialed me this morning, Mr. Chair, and I ran out of committee thinking I was having the baby today. So you're lucky she held it just for you, Mr. Chair.
Somebody get her phone number and call him right now. Sorry.
So
I'm having way too much fun. Representative Metz, go ahead.
Representative Baker, I'm looking for a starting point, too, and would welcome you as a co-author and take your input seriously as we move forward on that bill. But just in kind of doing rough math, 70,000 babies born in Minnesota a year. And kind of thinking to myself, that's a kind of a big number. So if you have that times 3,000, assuming every business wanted to take this up today and goes, great, a tax credit, government's not coming and forcing this on me. Representative Anderson, this bill would cost Minnesota taxpayers $210 million a year. So, members, what you're roll call voting on today is to potentially cost the state of Minnesota $210 million a year, all taxpayers at the $3,000 credit per baby. And essentially, even if we drop that number from 70,000, under my bill, with 10,000 babies, it would cover the entire startup at $30 million with the 3,000, assuming that we're talking about the employee receiving the benefit. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd just respectively ask as we're moving forward that I think I've put together another proposal that is very meritorious of this committee's time and would request that we try to get it heard this year as an option to save Minnesota taxpayers money, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'll leave it at that for right now and let it go on to the rest of them. But mine is a cheaper golden carrot, Representative Anderson.
Representative Pisa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry to do this. But it's really in response to Representative Baker's point about we should give this a fly. Because first of all, I don't think, as I understand the bill, most employers are not going to get nearly $3,000 under this bill because you'd have to be making $12,000 over those 6 weeks to qualify for $3,000. If I'm not correct, because it's 25% of that, right? So if you're making $1,000 a week, the employer's going to get $1,500, I think. Plus, that's going to be reduced because it'll increase your federal taxes. Right, so you get a state reduction in taxes. It's going to increase your federal taxes by 30%. So you're actually, the $3,000 should be reduced by 30% right off the top. So I don't think this is a particularly strong incentive. And we talk about tax incentives. You know, the working family credit, the renter's credit, those kind of credits, those kind of tax incentives are not like this one. The comparable one would be, say, the long-term care tax credit, the $1,000 tax credit that we passed several years ago. And Mr. Michael might want to comment on that. I think that's been an unqualified lack of success. People didn't buy long-term care because of that credit. We never actually made any improvement, but we spent a lot of money. But my biggest concern with this, going to the dollars, I guess, is we have in this state right now a lot of people. So I don't think it's going to actually incent any new employers to actually do this. But we're going to spend a ton of money right off the top because there, I bet, are easily 10,000 babies born in the state of Minnesota who are employed by companies who offer paid leave right now and didn't need this incentive to do it. So we're going to pay $30 million to people that are already doing it, taxpayer money. It's a windfall to them, right? Because they're already doing they're already offering this benefit. They're going to take the money for sure. But we're not going to incent anybody new, or we're going to incent very few people new, is my bet. And as Representative Anderson said, this has never been tried anywhere. So we have no track record to know that this is even going to work. Whereas the other proposal, Representative Metz's proposal, at least we know that it's actually working in some other places. So I don't know why we would spend all this money right off the top that we know for employers that are already offering this benefit with very, very little likelihood that we're actually going to incent very many more people to do it on a program that's never been tried anywhere. So I would also encourage you, Mr. Chair, to hear Representative Metz's bill so at least we can have a comparison of the two bills, and maybe even before we vote on this bill so we can actually have a full picture of all this. I mean, we have a long time before the end of session here, and I think a side-by-side comparison of these bills and which one is actually going to work and not be a waste of taxpayer money, I think would be a better approach to take.
Representative Thiessen, I think that's a fair request. Representative Makeway, did you still want to chime in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your incredible patience. I would like to. Representative Anderson, did you do an equity impact statement on this bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative. That is not something that I have done in any bill that I put forward. So, no, I have not.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Baker's point, and a little bit to Representative Thiessen's as well, you know, when we gaveled in the session and Speaker Dow talked about the achievement gap, we all stood up, we all clapped. So we should be addressing racial disparities every day in every committee with every bill that we do. When we're looking at budget surpluses and how we're going to spend them strategically, we've identified that racial disparities in every single category, whether it's housing or income or jobs or education, healthcare, it's important to address. And so when we're talking about people of color in the state, they already make less than half of their white peers. They are often in low-income jobs working too. These are hourly jobs. Hours are not guaranteed. I worked for Target for 4 years and made the schedule, and I would have 20 hours for a person 1 week and 5 the next week. So we don't even, these employees wouldn't even know if they would qualify as a full-time employee between their two part-time jobs because it's all at the whim of the employer. So I want to call attention to, it's good to have a conversation, but we're not attacking the very things that we said we wanted to do from the outset, or at least research to see if we are. I want to make sure that those people and those voices are represented here very well, because this bill presupposes that either a job does give you leave or that you can wait until tax time to get the money back so you can take the leave, or that your hours are going to be steady enough to know that you qualify as a full-time employee. All of those three things I mentioned are not things that a lot of people of color in this state have. And so I want to make sure that we do have bills that attack that directly so we can decrease the disparities. This is how we increase disparities. When we have bills that go to what we as a body of privilege already know, and I think that's what this is. I think this is a bill that goes to people that Representative Anderson and I both know. They're people like you and I sitting around this table. We've worked for employers that offer leave. We have had full-time jobs. We can wait a year to take the tax credit back or the money back. That's not the situation for a lot of Minnesotans, and I want to make sure that we all remember that. We are very privileged to sit here literally and figuratively, and their experience is different than ours, and this bill just does not get to the real experience of a lot of working Minnesotans.
Representative Anderson, you get the closing word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to set the record straight on a couple of things. I believe that Representative Metza earlier had said that this would not offer job protection. You already have job protection under the Federal Family Leave Act. That goes for 12 weeks. So you would be taking this for 6 weeks, and you would be covered on that piece. As well as Representative Metza, your concerns about this not going to entities that already provide the leave, in your own bill, you will be charging a payroll tax to individuals that already have leave. So it's similar to what your bill has. But that being said, the only state that we can compare ourselves is to the state of Washington. And in Washington themselves, they suspended their own program because the cost was estimated to be $1.2 billion per biennium to the state of Washington. That being said, I think that this is a great step forward for us in being able to incentivize a benefit that will help people get coverage on this area, and I would ask for your support.
And members, you know the author gets the last word on the floor. They get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but there was an outright lie in her last statement, Mr. Chair.
You know the customs of this committee as well as the floor.
Customs shouldn't allow a lie onto the record, Mr. Chair.
Don't burn relationships right now. You know the customs of this place. The author gets the last word. The committee legislative assistant will call the roll.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Mahoney.
No.
Clark.
No.
Regenius.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Barr.
Yes.
Baker.
Yes.
Daphne.
No.
Fabian.
Yes.
Howe.
Aye.
Lehman.
Aye.
Naquade.
No.
Metza.
No.
Moran.
No.
O'Neill.
Yes.
Rarick.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Sundin.
No.
Thiessen.
No.
Vogel. West.
Yes.
There being 12 ayes and 9 nays, House File 315 as amended is passed and referred to the Tax Committee. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Representative Metzler, we have now taken the vote, so you wish to speak, and we got 30 seconds before adjournment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just off the family, the government website for Department of Labor, in order to take FMLA leave, you must first work for a covered employer. Generally, private employers with at least 50 employees are covered. Private employers with fewer than 50 employees are not covered by FMLA, but may be covered by state family and medical leave laws, to correct the record in her closing statements. And I apologize, Mr. Chair, I should have waited until now.
All right. Members, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.